Buy with Rob is your best choice when purchasing your new home in the Puget Sound area. Call 360-710-9425 today and get started on the best home buying experience you will ever have. Go to buywithrob.com today.
Families have been killed by American bombs, as these peasants' families have. The fact that they rescue the American pilots, and that these pilots are well treated and cared for and operated on, I find miraculous. And I think that it is an indication of the quality of human beings that there are in Vietnam. Bon, j'ai dit que les pilotes ont tous, d'une façon ou une autre, dit...
Hello?
Podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Allman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
Do you want ads? Because that's how you get ads.
From the Buy With Rob studio located in beautiful Silverdale, Washington, this is the Dave Bowman Show. Now, here is your submarine qualified, well-coffeed, stuffy elitist history buff host, Dave Bowman.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So, perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, actresses, Twitter witch hunts, politics, and the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Well, it was a long time ago when a young actress did something incredibly dumb. Now, almost 50 years later, she has offered her... well, she's calling it an apology. Politician has an idea for how to stop fake news. You will not be surprised to learn what his solution is. And Twitter witch hunts, once again, taking their toll. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine, area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 565-3283. Email remains Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web, not only thedavebowmanshow.com and podcast99.org, but as well as on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google Play. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show online. Use your favorite non-denominational web search engine and join us each and every day. Comment away. Love to hear from you. Eloqui conizio. Greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Well, happy Tuesday, everybody. Glad you're with us today as we delve into the things that are intriguing to me. Yeah, I know. We're talking to the Taliban. Shocker there. Yeah, there's... We're kind of moving that sort of stuff towards later in the week because I need more time to assimilate all of the data. There's a lot of stories that are going on with that, and we're going to get into some of that a little bit later in the week, I suppose. For me, the big news story yesterday, and I think it actually came out Sunday, but I already had Monday's show written and taken care of, so I moved it to Tuesday, was the story about Jane Fonda. Now, some of you younger folk, your images of Jane Fonda may be, what's the word I'm looking at, softer than other people's? Jane Fonda is an incredibly lengthy actress. She's been around for a long time, long enough that those of you that remember On Golden Pond and the bikini scene, we're impressed by that. But then subsequent to that, of course, she's married to Ted Turner and she's at the Braves games when they're doing great. And I don't really know what the workout tapes in the 80s. Prior to that, her big success was a movie called Barbarella, which is a 1960s science fiction film about a naked girl in space. I don't highly recommend it. It's not a great movie, but it was a very popular movie because it was about, well, a naked girl in space. So you can understand why in the 1960s, when community standards were much less than they are now, it gained her some popularity and some notoriety. What she is, however, most famous for is in 1972, she made a visit to North Vietnam. There are any number of stories about what happened while she was in Vietnam. There are stories that POWs handed her messages, snuck messages to her to get back that she then betrayed back to the North Vietnamese. There are stories about things that she said, things that she did, but there are also photographic records of some of the things that she did. And you don't have to look very far to find them on the internet. You can, that's the beauty of the interwebs. You can pretty much find anything these days. We're going to be talking a little bit later about Twitter witch hunts, and this is, I don't consider this to be a Twitter witch hunt, because at the time, this wasn't something she did or said that she was embarrassed about. This was something that she was proud of. She held press conferences post-trip where she explained her position. I didn't play the whole interview there for you, mostly because it's a 1972 tape. It's a digitalization of a tape, but because it was done originally on a reel-to-reel tape, there's a lot of weird tape effects on it where it, you know, stretches and snaps back. And so the sound, you can listen to it, but it's not something I really want to broadcast because it's the audio quality of it's very low. But she talks about the fact that the Vietnamese people, the peasants of Vietnam, have resisted tyranny for thousands of years. And that if Richard Nixon stays in office, he's going to need to learn Vietnamese poetry, and he's going to have to understand that the Vietnamese are this close to winning their freedom, and they are not going to surrender. They are not going to negotiate. They are not going to have a ceasefire because they're that close, she says, to winning. This is in 1972 when, of course, Vietnam was tearing the nation apart. Did we need to be there? Were we doing the right thing? Were we doing it the right way? And that's... It's an interesting discussion, and Vietnam is one of those wars, one of those conflicts that you could spend a lot of time dissecting, pulling apart, making a documentary about, watching the documentary, criticizing the documentary. There are any number of things that you can do over Vietnam, but even for all of that, I'm not sure that we really grasp the lessons of it. We don't really apply the lessons that we think we've learned from it properly. And for the most part, sometimes I think there's not been a reconciliation with the idea of what happened in those years. Now, it's intriguing to me about the Vietnam War because, well, let me explain it to you this way. This is the way. When I was a child, when I was 10 years old, okay, when I was 10, the youngest World War II vets, the guys that turned 18 in 1945, okay, they were 46 on average years of age when I was 10, okay? That's also the same year that the Vietnam vets, the Vietnam War officially ended for our participation. The war itself did not end, but we pulled out our troops in 1973. And if you take the youngest Vietnam veteran at that point, they were 18 nominally. Yeah, I realize there were some younger folks and stuff like that. So you had an age difference there from 18 to 46 between the newest veterans and the youngest of the World War II veterans. And this doesn't even take into account the Korean War veterans. So you can put that in there. And then you've got this 10-year-old kid looking at both. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you think about this in a really esoteric kind of way, I'm 10. My grandfather is a World War II veteran. Okay. He was just a tad older because he didn't go in, you know, he didn't turn 18 while he was in the military, but he was in his early 50s at that point. And many of the people that were in my life, church, my dad's work, whatever, were World War II veterans or of that generation. My father was, you know, born during World War II, so he was not. But you looked at this whole thing and they were not old people. I certainly don't consider 46 to be old now. I would kill to be 46 again. 55 sucks. I'm just going to tell you that. Double nickel sucks. But I'd kill to be 46 again. I was having a good, I had a pretty good body back then. Now I don't. 18-year-olds, of course, were young and different and being drafted, much like the 46-year-olds were being drafted when they were in World War II as well. Jump ahead a few years, 1981, I'm joining the Navy. I'm 18 years old now. I was 17 when I joined, but by the end of the year, I was 18. Your youngest Vietnam veterans are now 26 years of age. They are, I don't want to call it within my peer group now, but they are in my world, okay? So my Master Chief is probably, well, he's, you know, 6 to 8 years older than me. So he's one of these youngest of the Vietnam era veterans. Meanwhile, the World War II veterans, the youngest of the World War II veterans are 54, 55 years of age, where I am now. Still, you have this disparity between them and you have this generational separation. But you need to understand that when I'm 18, World War II vets are 54, 55. And Vietnam, youngest Vietnam vets, are within my sphere of operation. There are people in the Navy with me who are Vietnam veterans. Okay? We come ahead to 1991, which is the year I get out of the Navy. I'm 28 years old. The Vietnam veterans are now 36. Many of them have retired from the military because they joined when they were 18. They did their 20 years, or they're about to retire from the military. And the World War II vets are coming up on 64 to 65. They're hitting retirement age. And I remember this distinctly because of my grandfather retiring officially. He was a little bit older than that. He retired, you know, in the late 80s. But I remember his retirement from government service. He was former Army Air Corps, and then he went on to work for the Air Force for many, many years. But they're 64, 65. They're their retirement age as I'm just closing in on 30. The Vietnam vets are still within my sphere. They're still there. Jump ahead to 2000, 18 years ago. I'm 37. Your youngest Vietnam vets are in their 45 range, and your World War II vets are now 73. And today, 2018, I'm turning 55. And it's not the new 35, trust me. The youngest, or the average World War II veterans, the youngest of the average World War II veterans is now 91 years of age. I'm told yesterday that there's somewhere around 400,000 of them left and that we're losing now 400 a day. It used to be 1,000 a day. They're not going to be around much longer. The youngest Vietnam veterans, the guys who were 18 in 1973, are now 63 years of age on average. Go back to when I was 10. The youngest Vietnam vets are now almost 20 years older than the World War II vets were when I was 10. And I tell people that because I want you to, you need to kind of, we grew up, those of us my age and maybe a little bit older, we grew up with a certain veneration of World War II veterans. We saw them a certain way. And then the Vietnam veterans, we didn't quite see the same way. And I'm not even sure we ever saw the Korean War veterans, to be honest with you, unfortunately. And now the Vietnam veterans are becoming, in essence, the World War II veterans of our youth, age-wise. There's some 400,000 World War II veterans left, and at our height of our service, we had about 400,000, 500,000 troops in country in Vietnam. So you figure there's probably 2 to 3 million Vietnam veterans altogether, maybe higher than that. I haven't run the numbers. And we're losing them as well. And there's something about these Vietnam veterans that is different, I guess, from the World War II veterans. Not only were they treated differently when they came back, they were treated differently while the war was going on because of the arguments and the debate and the difficulties that we had in the country, in our country, over whether or not Vietnam was worth fighting for or not. There were those who were there because they wanted to be there, and there were those who were there because they were told to be there. In either case, they went. There were numerous cases of people who refused to go. I mean, we're all familiar with that. We're all familiar with the manipulations that were made so that I wouldn't have to go to Vietnam. Everything from going to Canada to religious objections to bone spurs on your ankles to whatever to get out of going to college deferments to all kinds of. There was a marriage exemption at one point. I don't know if you knew that or not, to get out of going, to get out of the draft. And there was at least one politician that I'm not going to name, but it rhymes with Bernie Sanders, who has long been suspected of his first marriage was solely for the marriage exemption to stay out of the army. Now, this divisiveness, this problem that we had led to a lot of tension and it led a lot of arguments. And if you're at all familiar with the late 60s, early 70s history of this country, you know that discussions about the war were a surefire way to get into an argument. People tell me all that. We've never been more divided. Really? Were you here in 1971, 72? Because we were a lot more divided then. We had people who believed that my country, right or wrong. And they would argue that point. And the idea that there could be anything incorrect or wrong or inappropriate was an anathema to them. And they were going to cling to that. And we had people that believed that everything we were doing was wrong. That the whole idea was wrong. And therefore, we were wrong and we were bad. And those people found a great deal of representation in a young actress by the name of Jane Fonda, star of Barbarella, a story of a naked woman in space, who went to Vietnam in 1972 and then presented herself as a spokesperson for the Vietnamese as to they were going to win. They were going to beat us. They were going to win. And of course, the famous photograph taken of her, multiple photographs. There's an entire newsreel of this, but the photograph of her putting on the North Vietnamese helmet and sitting on the anti-aircraft gun and looking through the eyepiece into the skies where the American planes were flying in and being shot down. But luckily, according to her, the Vietnamese peasants were rescuing the pilots and making sure that they got the finest medical care was problematic for her. In 1972, of course, the echo chamber of 1972, she was applauded for this by the people that supported her. She was hailed as a hero. She was hailed as someone who was willing to put her reputation on the line for the North Vietnamese and yada, yada, yada. The military, not the military in the sense of the military industrial complex, the Pentagon, those kind of things. I mean, although I'm sure officially they did. The men on the ground, however, did not see it quite the same way. Nor did the POWs see it the same way. Nor did those who supported the military, the men, maybe questioning the mission, but understood that men had volunteered to do this and men had been drafted to do this and were being forced against their will to do this, saw her actions in a much different way. And from that day forward, the argument has clung to Miss Fonda as, well, like a pair of Tiberian bats. Really has. Every time Jane Fonda does something of any particular note, of any particular accomplishment, of any particular value, it is accompanied by a reminder that in 1972, she had her picture taken sitting on a North Vietnamese anti-aircraft gun. And as a part of that, she insulted millions of American veterans, millions of American servicemen, who don't see her in quite the same light that she sees herself. She constantly is pinged on about this, and for the better part of the last 50 years has basically, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but basically she's just ignored it. On the one hand, I kind of admire her conviction. If you really believe that you did the right thing, regardless of how people criticize you, then you should believe you did the right thing. The problem is that so many people in our culture today, so many people in our history and culture, don't actually believe they do the right thing. They did the popular thing. And as soon as what's popular becomes unpopular, they're backpedaling away from it and apologizing and saying that, well, I didn't mean it. It was just a joke. It was just this, that, the other. To her credit, for whatever that's worth, Miss Fonda, for the most part, has not done that. However, now she is, pushing 80, I guess, has decided to issue, quote, a new apology for what she has done. She did not apologize for taking the trip itself. She did not apologize for going to Vietnam. She, in fact, said, I'm proud I went to Vietnam when I did. But I am sorry that I was thoughtless enough to sit down on that gun at the time, and the message that sends to the guys who were there and their families, it's just horrible for me to think of that. Well, it's horrible for you to think about something you did 46 years ago in the moment of, adulation by people that you believed in a movement that was supporting what you did. But it's horrible now for you to think about what that moment might have caused, might have been. It's horrible for her to think of that. And of course, as you can probably guess, the reaction on the veteran side of this has not been, what's the word for it, exactly welcoming. She is not getting the smiling pat on the back welcome that she got in North Vietnam in 1972. She did not get to mug in front of the camera with her helmet on and her fingers in her ears and so forth and so on. She didn't get to do all that. And of course, it brings into question her whole story. I mean, once upon a time, she said she was manipulated into that. Then later on, she called it a 2-minute lapse of sanity that will haunt me forever. And the reaction has, as I said, been, well, less than acceptable. We feel so sorry for you that I imagine the 58,220 dead Americans that died and spread their blood on that ground and in their air feel sorry for you too. And then they proceed to call her names and so forth. I'm always fascinated by this. Jane Fonda is one of those people that I'm fascinated by because to me, she's emblematic of the anti-war movement in the 1970s, in the early, late 60s, 1970s. A war that divided this country that to this day still divides this country. You get the feeling that most people in the media, most people in Hollywood, and by the way, this whole thing came about because Jane Fonda, surprise, has a new project that she wants to publicize. And she knows that there's no such thing as bad publicity. And so, if I go out and sort of kind of apologize, I apologize for how it affects me that I took that photograph. She knows that there's going to be a response, and that response is going to generate interest, and that response is going to generate ticket sales, and that response is going to generate more income for Jane Fonda. And she knows that. She knows that aging hippies and anti-war activists of that era are going to show up to her play. Jane Fonda in 5 acts. I'm not going to go see it, but I still find it fascinating because of the lessons that have been applied subsequent to that. Whether I agree with Jane Fonda or not, and for the record, I don't. I don't think she did the right thing. I don't think she should be proud of going to North Vietnam. I don't think that people who have no authority, no ability to actually negotiate on part of the United States ought to be cavorting with the enemy. I just don't think that that's appropriate. I don't think that that's you know, to me, that's in a strange way. It's really no different than NFL players kneeling during the national anthem. Do you have a right to do it? Sure, you can do it all you want. Is it the smart thing to do? Is it going to piss people off? Sure, that's what it's going to do. The real question is that what you want? Is that what you're aiming for? Are you trying to piss people off because you're just trying to generate publicity, which is what I believe Jane Fonda is doing by issuing this this quote-unquote apology to herself for feeling bad about, I feel bad that those, for me, because maybe some people felt bad about what I did. Jane Fonda is never going to actually apologize for this, but to be fair, I don't think she should. If she really believes that she did the right thing, why should she apologize? If she really, truly, honestly believes that her life was empty prior to that, and that this was her fulfilling moment, then why should she apologize for it? That doesn't make it any less offensive. It doesn't make it any less purposeful. It doesn't make it any less wrong. But if she really believes that her sitting on that anti-aircraft gun in 1972 and then her subsequent press conference about that and whatever it is that she may or may not have done to the POWs there was the right thing to do, then at least she believes it was the right thing to do when you recognize the fact that she's an idiot, she's an actress, but she's passionate. She believes in what she's doing. She is going to hold to that, and I have a certain degree of respect for that. Doesn't mean I agree with what she did. At the same time, though, I wonder about our response as veterans. Now, certainly the Vietnam veterans have their reasons to dislike her, and they clearly do. I've never found the Vietnam veteran that thinks that she's okay. I've never found the Vietnam veteran that accepts her apology as meaningful and worthwhile of listening to. I've never found that Vietnam vet. But those of us that are even beyond that, veteran-wise, we have a certain visceral feeling about Jane Fonda that overwhelms a lot of things, even when we get the bikini scene in On Golden Pond, and even when we do discover Barbarella about a naked woman in space. We seem to find her repulsive because of her previous vocation. When I was in Atlanta, I was in Atlanta for many years, and I was very blessed to be in Atlanta when they had a very good baseball team. And one of the most interesting, funnest nights of my life was being at Game 6 of the 1995 World Series. I was there when the Braves won the World Series. I was in this third row in left center field. And even then, it was constant photos up on the big board of Ted and Jane leading the chop. Oh. And people would boo when they would put her on the screen because they still held this against her. I don't know that it's going to change anything. Her apology is meaningless. Her apology is an apology to herself for feeling bad potentially about what she's doing. And I get that. It's a publicity stunt because she knows that people like me and other Vietnam vets are going to talk about it. They're going to write newspaper editorials about it. They're going to write tweets about it. They're going to go, we can't forget what she did. And that's going to generate publicity for her new play, Jane Fonda in Five Acts, which people will snap up and she'll make millions more dollars. And at the end, we've played right into her hands is kind of what I'm saying. But we haven't learned as a people the necessary lessons here. We haven't learned that divisions in this country are permanent for the most part, and they never really heal. But they do get taken advantage of by the government. They do get taken advantage of by those who understand what those divisions did and how they affected us. And as we look at the war without end going on here again, that, by the way, is now at least twice as long as the Vietnam War ever lasted, has cost God only knows how much more, certainly in our treasure, maybe not in our blood, but certainly in our treasure and in our time and our surrendering of constitutional rights and our freedoms and our liberties to defend us against the nefarious enemy. the government learned a lesson, didn't they? The all-volunteer military, and believe me, I was a part of it. I'm proud of it. I think it's fantastic. I think it's great. But the lesson we got to take from the Vietnam War and from Jane Fonda in particular is that wars don't end until there's people opposing them. And there's nobody opposing this war without end on terror. There's nobody. Nobody's. I don't even give a rat's behind if you tell me you are. I ain't seen a code pink person in my... There is no organized, there is no even irrational resistance to this movement. So if nothing else, Jane Fonda is redrawing that attention, isn't she? By reminding us that once upon a time she got away with it, the government is saying, well, see, that's why we have an all-volunteer military now. Because we know this war is going to go on and on and on and on and on. Anyway, Jane Fonda sort of apologized to herself. Yippee. It's half past. It's the Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Network. Stay with us. Back right after this.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You are listening to The Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back. Tis I, Dave. You want to join me? Area code 209-565-DAVE is the text machine. It's also the voicemail machine. Email remains dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web, thedavebowmanshow.com, Facebook and Twitter. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show. Glad to hear from each and every one of you today. So, I don't know if you caught this on Sunday or not. I'm a baseball guy, as you know. I love the Mariners, and I'm a lifelong Dodger fan. I find that I can't let go of the Dodgers. I'm not passionate about them like I am the Mariners. The Mariners I just love, but I like baseball. I like the game. And on Sunday, the Dodgers were playing the Braves, and the Mariners game was later in the day, and so I was watching the Braves-Dodgers game, and I used to go to Braves games when I lived in Atlanta. Spent a lot of time going to Braves games. I went to games at Fulton County. I went to Turner Stadium, the Olympic Stadium when they turned it into Turner Field. And I will say this about Braves baseball. It was always entertaining. And they had some great teams when I was there. They won 14 divisional titles in a row. And I always felt like as an organization, they were doing things right. At any rate, I was watching the game Sunday, and they got this kid, Sean Newcomb, who is a young pitcher. And that's, it harkens back to the early 90s with the Braves young pitching staff. And this kid is just dealing on Sunday. And he is no-hitting the Dodgers and no-hitting the Dodgers and setting them down. And he gets the ninth inning, two outs, 8 2/3 no-hit innings. Got two strikes on Chris Taylor, and Taylor singles to left and breaks up the no-hitter. And, I mean, by any stretch of the imagination, this is a magnificent performance. In fact, the Dodgers, again, one of the class organizations of Major League Baseball, actually immediately after the game put out a tweet where Yasiel Puig is tipping his hat. It says, we tip our hat to Sean Newcomb for his performance today. I mean, that was a whale of a game. That was this kid almost pitching a no-hitter, and boy, everybody's excited, right? And literally within 10 seconds of the final out of this game, what's trending on media and Twitter? What's out there going, oh my God, this is a problem. Of course, this 25-year-old kid back when he was 17, 18 years old in high school put out a bunch of tweets that are immediately found and are, what's the word I'm looking for here? denigrating to certain minority groups. He uses language that is, it wouldn't be appropriate. He couldn't go on the media stand there after the game and say some of the things that he said in these tweets back in high school. And of course, this turns into, well, should he be suspended? Should he be forced, compelled, required to take sensitivity training? All of this kind of stuff. And he tried to get out in front of it and apologize up front. But the language that he uses in these tweets, here's the problem with this language. This language is common everyday language today. I mean, I've been to the park. I've heard what kids that of that age are saying to one another. I've heard how they talk. And yet somehow or another, I'm supposed to believe that all of them are going to somehow or another not be that kind of people when they're adults. That's the theory anyway, right? So of course, Sean Newcomb now has been labeled as a homophobe and a racist, and there you have it. In the meantime, some guy by the name of Gunn, what's this guy's name? James Gunn, was supposed to be the director of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Now, I have seen bits and pieces of Guardians of the Galaxy. John tells me all the time it's a movie I would like. I just don't have the time to sit down and watch it. I own it, but I don't have time to watch it. It's just not something that has drawn me in attention-wise in order to go, yeah, I want to watch this from start to finish. I'm told that it's a pretty good movie. And I liked Chris Pratt in Jurassic World. I did not like Jurassic World as a whole, but I did like Chris Pratt's role in it. I thought it was pretty snarky and funny, and I enjoyed it. And I am assuming he plays a similar character in Guardians of the Galaxy. But the movie had enough success that they made one sequel to it, and they're working on another one. Disney is in charge of this, which never makes me happy, but they fired the director, a guy by the name of James Gunn, because he put out some tweets. In the past, he put out some tweets that, of course, are inappropriate, I guess. He said some things that were, you know, homophobic and racist and pedophilic in his particular case. He made a lot of pedophilia jokes. Jokes, doing the air quote thing here. And so he's been fired. And now you have these scenarios where Twitter is getting people fired. This is what I've always said about Twitter. Twitter gets people fired. It really does. We decide one day that something that was funny now isn't funny. And rather than say, well, that's just not funny anymore, we somehow or another feel like we have to crucify the people who were telling the jokes, you see. And now that we have Twitter where we can go back and we have these social media systems where we can go back in people's history and we can go, well, that person said this on, you know, 12 years ago. That makes them a racist today. And we can ruin anything that happened, including an almost no-hitter or a movie that people were looking forward to. And I got some real concerns about this because how far, if you can go back in someone's Twitter history, how far back can you go in anything history? Right? I got he's a friend back in Modesto who is, in my view, we don't agree on a lot of things. I mean, I've told you before, I get along better with people who don't agree with me than people who I do. He is the Modesto Bee referred to him as a gadfly. He's a guy that pays attention to what the city council and the city government are doing. And he's constantly writing about it and he's constantly talking about it. And in most cases, he's right. These raising questions that need to be asked that nobody else will ask. And then the Modesto Bee one time goes and does a hit piece about his history going way back in his life about some things that were, you know, less than savory, I suppose. And uses that to judge the questions of today the performance of today. And I thought, well, that's BS. I'd hate for somebody to go too far back into my past. I mean, I was telling Tim the other day, you know, there's a 20-year gap in my life for a reason. There is virtually nobody on Facebook that's a friend of mine from that 20-year gap. There's virtually no one. And anybody who is a friend of mine from that 20-year gap is pretty much on mute. I don't pay any attention to anything they say. I don't respond to them. I don't even wish them happy birthdays. There's a reason for that, you know. I question this Twitter witch hunt. Guy throws a no-hitter. He's a 25-year-old major league pitcher. We got to go back into high school to find out where he talked like a high schooler and declare him a bad person. We got a movie that people are looking forward to. We got to go back into his Twitter witch hunt and find where he made jokes. And I read them. They're jokes. They're not funny jokes. They're very edgy jokes. They're the kind of jokes that you wouldn't tell your mother, but they're jokes. I mean, that much is pretty obvious to me. And I don't even know the guy. I've not seen his movies. I don't know anything about him other than that's a pretty obvious joke. But we're going to go back in his Twitter history and we're going to label him for that. And Disney's going to fire him. And Major League Baseball is going to tell Sean Newcomb that he has to go through sensitivity training now because of something he said when he was in high school. How far back are we going to go on these things? How long are we going to allow ourselves to continue to use past indiscretions, if we can even call them that, as reasons for not facing what's really going on? The good things that are happening, the good questions that are being asked, the good directions that we might need to go. Jane Fonda is a great example of this. Look, I don't like Jane Fonda. I already told you that. But the only reason Jane Fonda apologized at all was to generate publicity. That's it. And we're giving it to her. Then I'm kicking myself under the chair. You can't see it. For giving her publicity. For talking about it at all. For even mentioning the fact that once upon a time she was naked in a movie. In some ways, we're contributing to this because we're not focusing on the issues at hand here, which is, have we learned the lessons of Vietnam? Have we learned the lessons that our government has clearly learned? Can we not appreciate a no-hitter? Can we not understand that the future is the way it is? And instead, we're still focused on the Twitter witch hunt past of people that we're losing sight of what's really happening. That concerns me. It's like National Geographic. Yeah, I love National Geographic. Do you know that? I don't know if you knew that about me or not. I love National Geographic. It's one of my favorite magazines. I read it fairly religiously. I read it fairly consistently. I have a subscription to the actual magazine. It comes on my Kindle. It comes on my device, but I don't like to read it on there. I like to read it on the magazine because, you know, if I drop the magazine into the toilet, it's no big deal. If I drop my iPad into the toilet, it's a big deal. National Geographic today is being forced to admit, or has been forced to admit, that one of the pictures that they've shared, one of the pictures that they took, one of the pictures that they put out is fake news. It was the magazine's most viral video ever, featured heart-wrenching images of a starving polar bear perpetuating the narrative that the animal's imminent death was caused by climate change. Again, this is not a debate about climate change. This is a debate about messaging. It's a debate about history. It's a debate about going back into the past of things. It's a debate about how we look at things. And we were told, we were implied to, we were encouraged to infer that this picture was because global climate change is causing polar bears to die. And we had no context of the picture. We don't know where the picture was taken. We don't know when it was taken. We don't know any of that stuff. But we were shown a picture and a headline that said, global climate change, is it killing bears? And now National Geographic has been forced to admit that, well, no. Too many people, this gal by the name of Mittemeier, speaking for National Geographic, complains that too many people, quote, took the image literally, unquote. We are on a mission to capture images that communicate the urgency of climate change. Documenting its effect on wildlife hasn't been easy, she said. Wonder why. With this image, we thought we had found a way to help people imagine what the future of climate change might look like. We were perhaps naive, like sitting on an anti-aircraft gun in 1972. We were perhaps naive. People took it literally. And it wasn't literal. Maybe because Nat Geo put the first line of the video to say, this is what climate change looks like. And they emphasized the word climate change, highlighted them in yellow. He said pedophilia. That's what he said on his Twitter thing. And Sean Newcomb used bad words that describe people. So we should highlight those and put those out there, shouldn't we? I wonder in so many ways how we approach this. It's as if we're always looking for some reason to denigrate, destroy. We can't accept the idea that somebody might do something good who's not that, you know, great of a person. I'm not that great of a person. Again, there's a 20-year gap in my life for a reason, folks. Don't go looking for it because you're not going to find it. Believe me, you are not going to. It's long before Twitter, long before social media. You're not going to find it. You might find people from there, but you're not going to find it. But we can't accept. I mean, we have people today that go back into the classic authors of antiquity and complain that, well, they were racist 5,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago. Well, they must have been racist. The men who came up with the Constitution of the United States, well, they were racists. They were bigamists. They were, misogynists. We must tear down everything they've done because we don't like something in their past. Well, National Geographic faked a photo. Should we tear down everything that National Geographic... Should I take down every National Geographic map that I've ever collected in my life? By the way, they have a new book out with those maps in it. So my birthday's coming up in a while if you're thinking in those terms. Anyway, point being that why do we use that to destroy everything? The good news, however, and I wanted to, you know, leave you with some good news today because otherwise, I mean... Otherwise, it's depressing if we don't get some good news, right? You heard of Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, Virginia? Senator Mark Warner is the Senate's best-known tech magnet and top Intelligence Committee Democrat. And he's got a plan. See, the problem is there's too much fake news. There's too many people using what they find on social media. Too many people doing all that. So this guy's got a plan, folks. A 20-point plan. A 20 legislative proposal to combat the proliferation of disinformation campaigns on social media platforms. And not one of these plans is people are stupid and they're going to believe whatever they believe. Not one of these plans is it's free country. It's, you know, it's up to people to decide what they're going to believe. And if people are stupid enough to believe that the earth is flat, then, you know, there's really not much I can do for them. You won't be surprised that he has come out with a white paper for this. He's got initiatives to hold the platforms themselves legally liable for keeping fake audio and video off their sites. Oh, that's great. So Facebook, Twitter, Minds, whatever, is going to be legally liable for fake videos and or audios. Well, who decides if it's fake? Who decides if it's real? Who decides what this fake video and audio is? Huh? Well, if Congress is passing a law, you can pretty much guess that there's going to be some regulatory agency formed under the executive department to decide that, right? Meaning that the president of the damn United States is going to be deciding. And what if he decides, say it's 1973 again? What if Nixon decides that Jane Fonda is fake news? And he starts fining the organizations, the AP, UPI, whoever, that's spreading this out. You say it can't happen? We've got an actual sitting senator of the United States that thinks that that's a good idea. You will not be surprised that he wants a third party to be able to determine these things. And he wants to spend millions more of your tax dollars to fund a new department of the Federal Trade Commission to conduct, and I'm not kidding here, I'm quoting him here, media literacy campaigns. In other words, he wants government PSAs, millions of dollars worth, to tell people how to tell what's new, what's good news, and what's not good news. Just let it rattle around. Just let it settle in your brain a little bit for a moment. He wants the government to run ads telling you what the government has decided you should listen to and what you shouldn't listen to. Meanwhile, he's got another side of the agency fining people who are doing things that they don't like. And at the end of the day, the government is deciding who on Twitter has said something that's objectionable, who on Facebook has posted something that we don't like, and so forth and so on. The instructive lesson of the day is that Jane Fonda taught us something, didn't she? She taught us to be discerning, to look at something, somebody doing something incredibly stupid, and realizing that she may actually believe in that, but I'm going to have a more cogent argument against it than I don't like that. And at the end of the day, hopefully our arguments are, and hopefully we've learned that. Because otherwise, we're never going to get anywhere in life. Right? I got to get going. Grandkids are coming over today. We're planning a big thing. Going to have a little bit of fun with the kids and it's much cooler today. Maybe we can go to the beach and not melt. Hope you have a great day. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life. You love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. Please don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Please make sure you check out all the other great shows we have for you. Podcast99.org. Tim's there, Tim Preuss. Jay Brown is there. Jay came up with a new thing yesterday called Jay's Thoughts. It's pretty interesting. He's got that there. Grandpa Ken working on some stuff. Got a lot of other stuff in the works. So make sure you're staying tuned to podcast99.org. Subscribe to the website. And you'll get your little notification every time there's a new show. It's great. Keep you up to date, okay? Have a wonderful day, everybody. I will see you tomorrow, 10 a.m. for a brand new episode, Plausibly Live of The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.